morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you happen to be hiding out there in the globe tonight. Coming to you direct from the Brewery Overlook in beautiful southern Vancouver Island, I'm John Overall, and this is Tavern Talk, episode 104. Been long get going. This is the new version of Tavern Talk. If you go listen to the older versions, well, they're a little bit raw. There was a lot going on because I started this show back at the beginning of the COVID crap, and I was pretty pissed off at the world during that period of time. Well, I've gotten over it, and I've brought back the show and a new focus to the show. Previously, we're just bringing out all the crap, and we were trying to give you tips and tidbits on all kinds of backgrounds and to help you out with homesteading, etc. Well, this time around, we're doing it a little different. We've got the show has a focus on a very particular subject each show, and then if I've got extra stuff, it comes in at the second half of the show. So the first half of the show, that's where all your meat and potatoes is here. All right, but before we get started, something I started way back at the beginning of the show was readings from the Bible, get a little bit of spirituality for things. And I started with the book of Genesis, and then I finished that, and then I read miscellaneous here and there throughout the book. Well, I think it's apropos considering the world, the state of the world we are in today, in that we need to have a little bit. We're going to read from the book of Revelation, and I'm going to read the entire book over the course of multiple shows. So I'm not going to read every chapter all at once. We're going to read a few verses from each chapter and continue it show after show. Tonight, chapter 1, verse 1 to 11. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to shew unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John, who bare record of the word of God and of the testimony of Jesus Christ and of all things that he saw. Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein. For the time is at hand. John, to the seven churches which are in Asia, grace be unto you, and peace from him which is, and which was, and which is to come, and from the seven spirits which are before his throne, and from Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness and the first begotten of the dead, and the prince of the kings and earth, unto him that loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood, and hath made us kings and priests unto God and his Father, and to him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him, and all kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him. Even so, amen. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending, saith the Lord, which is, and which was, and which is to come. The Almighty, I, John, who also am your brother, companion in tribulation, and in the kingdom and patience of Jesus Christ, was in the isle that is called Patmos, for the word of God and for the testimony of Jesus Christ. I was in the Spirit and the Lord's day, and heard behind me a great voice as of a trumpet, Jesus saying, I am Alpha and Omega, the first and the last. And what thou seest, write in a book, and send it unto the seven churches which are in Asia, and Euphrates, and unto Samaria, and unto the Pergamos, and unto Thyatira, and unto Sardis, and unto Philadelphia, and unto Laodicea. All right, well, we'll hold it at that one. Come back to it more for next week. But it sounds like Jesus was stepping out and saying, hey, you need to spread this word and this gospel far and wide. Cover the earth. Get it out to the seven churches. I didn't know there were seven churches. That's kind of interesting. All right, well, with all of that, let's dive right into today's main topic. This show, if you haven't been paying attention to the news lately, this show, we're going to be talking about the recent issues and the sudden appearance of bird flu in cows. And what this means and what they're doing, and how did they find bird flu in cows? How did they find bird flu in several other animals that we're going to talk about here today? We've got some crazy stuff going on. Are they trying to scare you? Are they preparing for something? Are they trying to destroy our feed system? You know, are they trying to control the cattle industry, as has been mentioned, by scaring everybody by saying we need to track all the animals, put these tags on them, you silly slave? You know, all of these things. It sounds like, to me, it sounds like it's a bit of a war on meat and dairy and farmers in particular. So what we're going to do, though, is we're going to take a deep dive into the PCR, what they're doing, talk about what's been said and what's been done. We've got some backgrounder clips that we're going to be talking about. And some of this stuff is going to take us places we may not like. And that way direct us into, you know, what's going wrong with our food system in and of itself. Now, it would help if you manage to get yourself a local farmer to help you out and do all the things you need to do, you know, where you can buy your food, buy your meat, and everything else. But other than that, we're going to dive right into it. Now, the first one I've got here, I've got some backgrounders, and we're going to talk about the bird flu in milk. And should we be concerned? So let's have a listen.
America's dairy cows will be tested for bird flu more closely to stop the virus from spreading. Some new rules were put in place yesterday after the FDA reported finding fragments of the bird flu virus in pasteurized grocery store milk. Regulators, though, say there is little risk to humans. Dr. Celine Gounder is a CBS News medical contributor and editor at large for public health at KFF Health News. Good morning, Dr. Gounder. First, I want to just ask you about that headline when I first read this yesterday. Of course, you know, alarm bells go off when you hear that it's found on the grocery store shelves in pasteurized milk. What concerns should we have? Should we have concerns?
Yeah. I think we should be very clear that the tests that came back positive are for the genetic material of the virus. This could just be virus fragments, what's left over after pasteurization. Mm-hmm. And so this by itself is not a reason for alarm. There are additional tests being done to see, is this live infectious virus or is this just the dead virus we would expect to see?
So drinking it, would you get sick drinking that milk?
Well, presumably, if this is simply the leftovers after pasteurization process, you should not get sick from this.
And there you have it. There's where they start it. You know, they start going, it's like, oh, no, panic. We found the fragments of the DNA. And how did they find these fragments? Well, we'll be getting to that. They're using the PCR test the same way they used it to scare everybody during COVID. You know, take the PCR test, and we're going to hear from the inventor of the PCR himself, even though he died a month before COVID started, so he wasn't around to talk about the misuse of it. He left enough interviews that I was able to find some information, and we'll be talking about that. So let's grab a hold of another one here and see what else they had to say.
We know that H5N1, the bird flu virus, it's out there. It's in the animal population. But when it comes to human risk, there has been only one confirmed case, a farm worker in Texas who is a confirmed case. So what can we gather from that when it comes to human risk of transmission?
Well, there are some tests still ongoing, so to see if there's any live infectious virus in the milk supply. So what we do there is we try to grow up any virus, what we call culture. It's the kind of test we do. Those tests are still ongoing. We anticipate those will come back negative. Pasteurization works for all the viruses that we've tried to test this on so far. There's no reason to think it wouldn't, but we want to confirm that that's the case. The other thing we're looking out for is, do we see pigs infected? Pigs have traditionally been the mixing vessel for human and bird flu, and that's how you get these Frankenstein scary flus. Mm-hmm. That's what we have a bit of a blind spot on right now, and so we need to be digging more into that.
So it sounds like they're going to be digging into the pig farmers also along the way. And as they mentioned, well, they try to grow them up, but then they don't use those methods when they want to tell you that there's fragments, because they can't grow fragments. All they can do is use the PCR test to bring that forward. And we've got one other little piece of background or information here about this.
And is the government doing enough, and the FDA and farmers? What are we hearing about how these cases are being reported or how they're taking care of this?
You know, big picture, I think there could be more transparency and cooperation, whether it's the USDA or farmers allowing the USDA and public health people onto farms to do the testing. Some of the workers are not trustful of the government and so don't want to come forward for testing. Mm. So everybody needs to be working better together.
All right.
Wonder why the workers aren't trustful of the government. What are the scariest words you ever hear? I'm from the government and I'm here to help. So on this is telling you that they're running tests. They're trying to petrify people, saying, oh my God, it's in our food service. Now they did talk briefly about one farmer, supposedly, who had the H1N1, supposedly confirmed, but it didn't go anywhere and he's healthy. And then there's some stuff I saw on the Twitters today on the X feed that he had bloodshot eyes. And it's just like the insanity around this, it's building to something. I'll be keeping an eye on it as we go along. But we've got a couple other little things. These are the news articles and the clips I've got from them. And I need to say a shout out to the No Agenda Show for thanks for the clips. Save me the trouble of cutting them down. But we've got another one here on bird flu in milk report.
And a consumer alert about the nation's milk supply after the FDA found traces of bird flu in 1 in 5 samples it tested. Ann Thompson now with what you need to know.
In his Ohio State lab, veterinary epidemiologist Andrew Bowman is testing milk from 6 states and finding traces of bird flu where he shouldn't.
What does that tell you about the spread?
I think it shows us that there are many more cows infected than we've given it credit for at this point.
Nearly 40% of the milk he tested was positive for H5N1, also known as bird flu. That may sound alarming, but additional testing, Bowman says, shows the pasteurization is working.
If I'm a parent buying milk for my child, how worried should I be about the bird flu?
Yeah, at this point, I would not be worried about that at all. I'm continuing to drink milk.
So tonight, attention turns to the source, the nation's dairy cows.
That was great. I loved how they tossed in the mooing cow into that. Now, what we've got going on here, is we've got a little bit of insanity in that they're trying to scare you, and they're making it about the entire supply. Now, unfortunately, I live up here in the Great White North, the Kanuckistan, and we're not allowed to purchase raw milk. The only way we can have raw milk is we have a cow. I don't have a place to keep a cow, so I don't have raw milk. In the States, I know there's multiple places people can get raw milk and enjoy it. What I believe they're going to do is they're going to go after the raw milk industry because they don't want people drinking raw milk. They don't want people drinking healthy foods or having healthy, good-for-you foods. They want you drinking and eating the crap they pass off as food at the grocery store or in the mega farms or in the mega production plants. And, you know, we're going to be getting to the point here in a little bit where we are going to talk a bit about the them testing the meat to see if they could find bird flu in the meat. And that's a whole nother thing. So let's continue this one on.
For just one known case of minor symptoms in a person related to direct contact with infected cattle. The U.S. Department of Agriculture ordering all dairy cows crossing state lines be tested for the virus.
Now, when ordering all of them, if they're crossing state lines, be tested, you know, who does this benefit? That's the other thing, is follow the money, folks. Where is the money leading on this? You know, who does it benefit by ordering every cow tested?
My whole livelihood.
Martha Thomas owns the smallest dairy herd in Shelby County, Ohio, where she produces, processes, and sells milk.
How do you ensure your cows are healthy?
We don't let people in and out. We don't switch cows. It's a closed herd.
There are no signs of bird flu here, but herds in 9 states contracted the bird flu, including one in Ohio.
The entire barnyard is on alert, and we're looking to make certain it doesn't end up someplace else.
While officials try to figure out what's going on the farms, the FDA says pasteurization is doing its job, killing active viruses and bacteria to keep the milk supply safe.
There you have it. What they want to do is they want to make sure everyone uses pasteurization. And so what we're going to do before we dive into some of the other things, I've got a few articles here. And these articles are going to talk a little bit about it. And we've got, first article comes from Farmterio, Ontario Farm. And it's a ag thing. Now, they're pretty much parroting what's going on in the States. Now, I imagine they haven't yet brought it to Canada to do this to Canadian herds, but I don't imagine it'll be too long before they follow suit, because whatever the United States does, well, Canada tends to come along quite nicely because our balls are attached to you, unfortunately. So they continue to parrot that they found, you know, 1 in 5 samples of commercial milk are testing positive for traces of bird flu. There's no evidence the milk poses a danger or live virus is present. Well, it can't be present. It's like it's pasteurized. Nothing can be present in it once it's pasteurized. That's why it's dead milk. It's barely healthy for you. You know, it might have vitamin D in it or whatever else they put back in it after they've taken everything out through pasteurization. But for the most part, it's kind of dead. You know, this is a really interesting article. You know, the retail milk studies have shown no results that would change the assessment of commercial milk supply. You know, eight states in the U.S. have confirmed cases of the bird flu in 33 herds. 33, ding, ding, ding. I need to have that one brought up because this is a number, folks. If you pay really close attention. And where'd I put it? There it is. 33, that's a magic number. All right, this is something that, you know, being a No Agenda listener for nigh on 12 years or more, they noticed early on in their podcast that there's this consistent thing about 33 popping up whenever some sort of psyop was going on against the public. And this one here just confirmed it. 33 herds, so, you know, they're signaling. Something's signaling. So whenever you see 33, that's a signal that something is being psyoped in some way. You know, we've got another one here. And here we go. Colorado Sun, bird flu detected in Colorado dairy herd, widening a nationwide outbreak amongst cattle. You know. And, of course, they're in here. The State Department said news release. They're continuing to see this ongoing HPAI outbreak evolve, and over the last month has seen transmission of the virus now move into dairy cattle. So again, they're just digging in to scare you, I believe. Now we've got another one here. Stat news that it's prevalent in cows. It's widespread. The outbreak is widespread. And so what are they going to do? Oh, we got somebody there trying to get a sample, clean sample for testing of raw milk. You know, so we've got some insanity going on. Let's see. I've got a couple others here. Okay. This is from the Vet Center. They're testing cattle for the highly pathogenic avian influenza. That's what they're calling it, the highly pathogenic avian influenza, H5N1. You know, according to the federal order, lactating dairy cattle are required to have a negative HPIA PCR test. Here it is, right here. HPIA PCR test within 7 days of interstate movement. Does that sound familiar? Huh, I wonder where that comes from. I don't know. Got to have a negative test within 7 days. Per the guidance, for groups with lots of 30 or fewer animals moving interstate, all animals being moved must be tested. If more than 30 animals are moving interstate, then only 30 animals must be tested. Got to love the logic here. All right, you're moving 31, we'll test, then pick 30 and test them. Wow. All right, well, the one that doesn't get tested, maybe that's the one that's supposedly infected. So this is the insanity. The big one here is the PCR test. I think I've babbled on here enough before we dive into the meat. And I think we need to have a listen and talk about the PCR test. Now, Kerry Mullis is the inventor of the PCR test. He won a Nobel Prize for inventing PCR. And he had a few things to say. I've got a couple of different interviews that I've pulled from him. We've got one here. And this is where someone asked him a specific question about the misuse of the PCR. Now, in this time, he was doing these interviews during the insanity heydays of, not HPV, HIV, the HIV virus, and the insanity that went with that and how they killed so many people with the ATC drug and how Fauci was right behind that one, too. So just so you remember. All right, so let's hear what Kerry has to say.
I think misuse PCR is not quite, I don't think you can misuse PCR. No, the results, the interpretation of it. See, if.
So as he says, you can't misuse PCR, not for what it was designed to do. It was designed to find molecules and to wind up molecules, as he'll explain here in a moment.
If you can say, if they can find this virus in you at all, and with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody.
That's an interesting point. If you use PCR well, properly, you can find just about anything in anybody. And he'll explain further.
It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else, right? I mean, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something which you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one.
That was an interesting point. Is you take a single molecule and you amplify it up until you can actually measure something in it, and in that molecule, you'll be able to measure something. You'll find whatever you're looking for, or virtually every time you look for it. And if you run it up enough times, you start to find more and more stuff, which was what was happening during the COVID crap, you know, during the Wuhan flu stuff. Because I prefer it to be called the Wuhan flu myself, because that's where it started, was in Wuhan. Anyway, he's got a little bit more to say on this.
One single one of them in your body, okay? So that could be thought of as a misuse of it, just to claim that it's meaningful. But the real misuse of it is you don't need to test for HIV. You don't need to test for the other 10,000 retroviruses that are unnamed also in the subject. See, somebody that's got HIV.
Okay. That pretty much covers what he says. You can go check this the links for this this full interview are in the show notes, and they're really quite good. And as he said, you know, 10,000 plus other retroviruses are floating around in your body, but they mean nothing. They do nothing. They don't do anything. You know, when they finally create a new one or discover a new one or realize there's a new one that we're not using or they're not making money on, in my opinion, because everything is about making money. It's all about how much money they can make off of this. Who makes the money and who are they destroying in the process? They're destroying the little guys. They're destroying the people that can't afford to pay. Because one of the things on this, when some of the articles I've got here, I won't be covering them all, but some of them talk about these small farmers that are like, I've got a small herd of 25 cows. Now I got to test all 25 cows, pay for this, whatever fees are necessary for these PCR tests so I can move them across. But I don't have that kind of money to do this. And what's going to happen to the small herds? The small herds are going to have to sell my cows and go work in a city. You know, basically they want to drive everyone small out of being able to do anything. You know, I've started reading The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire and some of the other rise and falls of empires and whatnot. And one of the things that's pointed out constantly on the X feed is that when Rome started to really fall was when their agricultural industry was controlled by six families or six businesses, controlled all the farmlands and everything. They drove all the small people out of business, drove them into the cities where the prices are high, there's not enough food, there's starvation. There's all you got to do is look. You don't even have to look in the news. Just go look on X and go see all the insanity that's in the big cities nowadays. So we got a little bit more from Kerry. This is a different interview he did talking about the PCR test. And this one here is a little more enlightening than this. This was his first interview. I believe this interview was in 97, and the other one was in 98 or 99. So this one here is a little later. So let's have a listen to this one.
Right on through 1996. That's not an epidemic. The number of cases reported went up epidemically, you know, exponentially, because the number of tests that was done went up exponentially. I asked, the first time I ever saw one of these CDC graphs, it showed this thing going off the page. You know, I went up after that and I said, how did you disentangle did you divide the number that you've got here by the number of tests that were done? I mean, can we believe that this line that you've drawn here about number of positive tests reported, is that really indicative of the spread of this virus? Is the virus getting...
Okay, so that's an interesting point. And this is not something they tell you. It's like, how many tests are they doing to get these positive results? Are they doing one test, getting the positive results? Doing 10 tests, getting one positive result? You know, so meaning that it's not prevalent. You know, the more tests they do, well, the more tests you do, the more positive results you will get. And of course, again, he doesn't talk about it in this interview, but again, they can spin it up to whatever they think is necessary to create what they're looking for in here. So at any rate, where this leads us next is what they've started to do now. They have started coming after the beef. And we've got a couple of reports here, first a couple of clips, and then we've got some articles and other news and information. So let's hear this.
We turn to the bird flu concerns here in the U.S. after finding the virus in some dairy cows in several states. The USDA says it will now sample some ground beef sold at stores in those states where dairy cows tested positive. Authorities say the U.S. meat supply does remain safe. Meantime, there are reports a bottlenose dolphin in Florida has died from bird flu, possibly the first dolphin in the U.S. to die of the virus.
Now, that's kind of an insanity bit. First, they talk about the beef, and they're testing the beef for the... And then they talk about a dolphin. Now, who in their right mind and why would they like, oh, we've got a dead dolphin. Oh, well, let's go test it. Let's go PCR test it for the bird flu. Yeah, that's definitely a consideration when you're testing a dead dolphin. Let's go see if we can find a bird flu in it. Come on. I'm not buying that. I'm not buying that piece of bullshit. Now, we have one other clip here. This one here comes from World Health Organization. You're trustworthy. We are here to help you from the World Health Organization, and we're going to provide you with what we need and what they want to hear and see done.
The current outbreak, for want of a better word, in America amongst cows is really concerning as well, and also talks to this issue of transmission. We have to understand in those cow settings, sheds, how H5N1 is transmitting, because it may be evolving into transmitting in different ways. Do the milking structures...
I like that bit. It may be evolving. And changing to in those sheds to, you know, infect humans.
Of cows create aerosols. Is it the environment which they're living in? Is it the transport system that is spreading this around the country? So this is a huge concern, and I think we have to watch more than watch. We have to make sure that if H5N1 did come across to humans with human-to-human transmission, that we were in a position to immediately respond with access equitably to vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics.
Oh, imagine that. Access to therapeutics, vaccines, and diagnostics. You think they're planning something? Maybe. Hard to say, but considering what happened in the last 4 years, in 2020, where all of a sudden, magically, this virus spreads across the globe, people are getting sick, but nobody was really initially dying because, you know, one of the biggest things I had note of, and for clarification, I happen to be of pure blood. I noticed that, you know, the homeless weren't dying. How come the homeless aren't dying from this plague that is killing so many thousands of millions of people. No, the plague of deaths didn't really start to occur until after this magic vaccine, which was created in under 6 months, less than 6 months. It was just magically there. And then they forced it onto everyone, literally forced it. They're backpedaling now, going, we didn't force anyone. It was your choice. No, it wasn't the choice of many people. I fortunately was in a position where it truly was a choice. But I know people that unfortunately had to take it or lose their job or lose their freedom. I know people that have that particular event happen to them. Many people lose their job. And if they lost their job, they would have lost their homes, lost so much other things. And they had to risk it. They had to risk it, even though they didn't want to. They had no choice in the matter. I have not known anybody personally to die after them, but I have and do know a few people that ended up very ill, hospitalized, and it was blamed on everything else but the vaccine. And I'm certain it was the vaccine. I know a few people that are completely gone, and they've even taken all of the booster shots that have been given out. And every time a couple of these people took a booster, they would end up sick for weeks or a couple of months afterwards. It's like, do you think? No correlation. Well, correlation doesn't mean causation, but hey, I know my stats from my psych degree, and correlation often means causation. It doesn't always mean causation, but more often than not, and especially when I did my stats courses, correlation equaled causation maybe 8 or 9 out of 10 times. They just won't admit that. So at any rate, we've got that. Then we've also got these other problems here in that they're coming, like I said, they're coming after the beef. Now, they did actually... Where is it here? Oh, and I forgot a link. So let's pull this one out of the Twitter feeds. This is an interesting one. Yeah, the amplification threshold they're using for the PCR test. They magnified it up to 36 times. You can, as I've shown from Kerry himself, you know, if you amplify it up enough, you can find almost anything, literally anything, you know. So they're trying really, really hard to do this. Now, I had something else here, and I'm going to have to go look it up. I had the article. This is it here. Okay, this is the one where the USDA and, this is it right here. Okay. Okay, first this one. Okay, where the USDA is to test ground beef in states with outbreaks of bird flu. This is their initial one. And let's have a listen to what this video has to say. It's only a short minute and a half, so let's get a pop
in. In his Ohio State lab, veterinary epidemiologist Andrew Bowman is testing milk from 6 states and finding traces of bird flu where he shouldn't.
What does that tell you about the spread?
I think it shows us that there are many more cows infected than we've given it credit for at this point.
Nearly 40% of the milk he tested was positive.
Okay, now there's a problem with this. This is grocery store milk, and we'll be getting to the point of grocery store beef also. Grocery store milk, I don't know if you know this, folks, but when you buy that grocery store milk, that 1 gallon jug, that half gallon jug, that is not from a one cow. That milk might be from as many as 100 plus cows. Because they collect all the milk on the farm, they stick it in a tanker truck, they truck it down to a plant, and the reason I know this is here on the island I live on, is we have dairy farms up island, and we have a giant milk plant down here in the South Island. You know, when I was younger, it was a smaller milk plant. A few years ago, they tripled its size. They bought up a bunch of land around it and increased the size of the milk plant. They truck all that milk down. They run it to the milk plant. The milk plant then runs its processes on it, its pasteurization processes on it. Then they separate out all the good stuff and the creams and other things. They make all their different products, et cetera, et cetera. So that milk does not come from a single cow. It comes from multiple cows. So let's have a listen. So he's like, it was more widespread. Well, how do you know it's widespread? Do you know exactly what cow you're testing the milk on?
For H5N1, also known as bird flu. That may sound alarming, but additional testing, Bowman says, shows the pasteurization is working.
If I'm a parent buying milk for my child, how worried should I be about the bird flu?
Well, of course pasteurization is working. Because that's what pasteurization does. It's the same thing as, you know, when you buy hamburger meat or other things that are risky if they're not cooked all the way through. You cook it to a certain temperature, and that kills any virus and bugs in there because they can only live up to a certain temperature. I think it's 165 degrees. So at 165 degrees, poof, dead, done. Actually, I'm pretty sure it is because I just learned a whole bunch of stuff about that. So let's hear another.
Point, I would not be worried about that at all. I'm continuing to drink milk.
So tonight, attention turns to the source, the nation's dairy cows, with so far just one known case of minor symptoms in a person related to direct contact with infected cattle. The U.S. Department of Agriculture ordering all dairy cows crossing state lines be tested for the virus.
It's been my whole livelihood.
Martha Thomas owns the smallest dairy herd in Shelby County, Ohio, where she produces, processes, and sells milk.
How do you ensure your cows are healthy?
We don't let people in and out. We don't switch cows. It's a closed herd.
There are no signs of bird flu here, but herds in 9 states contracted the bird flu, including one in Ohio.
Oh, why did they single out Ohio like that? We got herds everywhere and like, oh, and Ohio. We can't forget Ohio. I wonder why they singled out Ohio. That's kind of an interesting tidbit.
The entire barnyard is on alert and we're looking to make certain it doesn't end up someplace else.
While officials try to figure out what's going on the farms, the FDA says pasteurization is doing its job, killing active viruses and bacteria.
Oh, I wouldn't expect anything less than that. All right, so back to the beef. And of course, what happened when the USDA decided to test the beef? It tested negative for bird flu virus. Question I've got here, okay? They tested ground beef. I'm not an expert on beef industry. I don't claim to be. I should learn more about it. But for instance, grocery store beef. Let's say grocery store ground beef. How long between the time the cows, okay, now the cows are taken to slaughter and they're slaughtered, I understand they hang the meat for a period of time. Actually, I'm going to go check that. How long between the time a cow is slaughtered and the beef is in the store? Let's go ask that question. Let's go. How long between time cow is slaughtered and beef is in store? Okay. How long? 2 to 6 weeks between the time a cow is slaughtered and the time it reaches a supermarket. Okay. That's what I get when I, you know, type it in here. You know, let's see, slaughter and grocery store. Industry standard is hang the carcass for slaughter after slaughter for 10 to 14 days. That's 2 weeks there. Beef that's going into hamburger or sausage, they want the hang time, so enzymes. So, okay, I guess if it's going into hamburger or sausage, it might not last that long. Okay. Let's ask the question a little bit better. Slaughter and beef. Beef is in store. Hamburger. Let's put that one in there. hamburgers in the store. Okay, well, I still get the same answers. Okay, so all right, it's varying. So it's days. Now, this all started a couple of weeks ago. They started testing the beef like a week and a half later. So what are the chances that the beef they're testing was from cows that were slaughtered 2, 3, 4 weeks previous to that? Because there's a lot of processes that go into it. So at any rate, they collected 30 samples of ground beef from stores in states with outbreaks of dairy cattle herds, and none of them came back. So even when they spun it up to the highest they could possibly get away with, I imagine, they found them negative. So that's a bonus. So hopefully that backs them off that for a little while. But that doesn't seem to be satisfying everyone. They've got so much more going on here in what they're doing. Now, what we've got going on here, they're working overtime to scare the hell out of you. And even someone that I kind of liked following his stuff, this Michael Snyder on, I need to clear out some tabs here. Michael Snyder in Substack, even he's kicking it out to scare everyone. He's like, oh my God, they told the humans, at first they told us the humans were at no risk, but now the WHO is saying there's an enormous concern, blah, 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 blah. You know, and he's like, tested had viral fragments in them. It's like it doesn't even distinguish between viral fragments and possibility of live viruses and possibility of nothing there. I read this. It's like, it was insane. It's like, really? You're just working hard at scaring people. Of course, the other one, we had a brief thing with that. They're warning, as the first American dolphin diagnosed with highly pathogenic bird flu. It's just another piece of insanity. You know, South America, the bird flu is spreading across South America, killing scores of sea lions. You know, it's like they're working so hard to find a human that they can pin it to so they can really work overhide. Now, be aware, folks, once they do pin this on a human, that it can be possibly spread and they can say anything that it's spreading in humans, we are in for a world of hurt. Lots is coming. And of course, next, they're coming for your cats because, well, dolphins aren't good enough. Let's go for cats. Need all those ladies in boxed wine and cat land to feel sorry. Four more cats test positive for H5N1. Four more cats. Growing outbreak in dairy cows, and now it's a growing outbreak in cats. They're going to be coming for your cats next. I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to take your cats probably, but they're going to panic you. It's like, oh my God, don't pick up the feline. Don't let the feline near you. Don't let it near your face, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I've got a whole bunch of other articles and notes here. I just realized, wow, this has gone way longer than I kind of expected. But as I've said, the primary subject will be anywhere from half an hour to an hour in length. Now, I've got some articles here talking about the poultry disease, influenza, livestock, the beef safety studies, beef safety studies that have been done concerning the spread from cows to cats. See, this is the big one. Oh, how did the cats get the H5N1? They got it from drinking raw milk. That's how they got it. They got it from drinking raw milk. Oh dear, drinking raw milk. Remember what I said? They're coming for the raw milk. They really want that raw milk gone. You know, the same reason they had everyone slather themselves in sunblock, solar 2000, block it out and just basically, don't go out in the sun because the sun's bad for you. It's evil. No, the sun is very good for you. Do not wear that skin cancerous stuff. I am certain of it. I've not worn sunblock my whole life. And yes, I get sunburned from time to time. And no, I'm not a young man. And that's the way it works. Our skin, our bodies have responses to these things. We did not evolve on this planet with sunblock. All right, what else do we got here? We got CDC article. emerging infectious diseases, talking about it. Ground up chicken waste. Now, this is a theory that they're working on, is that ground up chicken waste is the problem. Now, this leads us to where I said we might have a problem understanding our food system and or dealing with our food system. And this doesn't happen if you know a local farmer, a beef cattle farmer or chicken farmer or raising eggs or whatever, a good local farmer that has proper husbandry practices, takes care of their animals, takes care of their stuff. But in our massive corporate-run cattle lots, what they do is they take all the chicken waste, where the chicken scratch and waste and shit and poop into it, and then they feed it to cattle because cattle can digest it because it's still something they can digest. It's not overly good for them, but it cuts down on the feed. They have to pay the feed the cattle. And this could be a source of it. Yes, I'm kind of in agreement there. It does make logical sense. Is it could very well be. Now, we've also got, okay, we've already done the thing here where the U.S. is going to test the beef cattle. All right, so these are all the things that are happening with it. This is a bit of an insanity for everything that's going on. Now, hopefully, this gets out there and more people find out about this, more people question it, more people questioned the use of the PCR test, which was never, ever meant to diagnose anything or determine an infection. It was simply meant to find out if those molecules exist. And from there, other proper tests are supposed to be done to determine whether or not there is a pathogen that is problematic. So, that being said, what we're going to do here is second half of show. I don't have a second half of show tonight. I didn't prepare one. So I'm going to cut this show at about this point here. Thank you all for listening. I greatly appreciate it. If you want to find out more, head on over to therogueoasis.com and find out more there. The show will be posted there for those that want to listen to it later. And, well, we've also got other things for sale over at the Rogues Oasis. I sell freeze-dried products and hot sauces. I can ship them only to Canada currently. I can't ship them to the States because I haven't yet jumped through all of the government hoops to get it across the border, because international shipping is a challenge for food-type products because of this kind of silly panic that we talked about tonight. It's like, oh my God, you know. And of course, due to the shysters that have gone before me who have screwed everything up, thus creating the reasons for all of these rules. You know, the reasons we have pasteurization was because of shysters who did not take care of their cows, who were letting the udders get infected and still pumping the milk and selling the milk and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just horrible husbandry practices. And we all know who the people were that did that. All you do is look up history and you'll see and find out. Open your eyes, folks. It's out there to see. So you can follow me more here on Odyssey. You can check me out on BitChute. I don't upload to BitChute much anymore. You know, most everything's over at the Rogues Oasis. You can also find me over at Twitter at AuntConSue. It's a very old Twitter account. I think I opened it back in 2011, back when Twitter was relatively new, and it's been there a long time. So, at any rate, thank you all for listening. I greatly appreciate it. We got a little bit of music. Carry us on out of here, and we'll call it a night.
These are the days of thunder. We're gonna make time stand still. Quarter after midnight, and I'm watching the wall. Sometimes I feel so uptight, I just can't sleep at all. Every day doing the same old thing, we're losing time. The weekend comes, we gotta have some fun and rewind. We gotta feel the hunger.
gotta feel the hunger. Hanging over the edge just to taste the thrill. These are the days of thunder. We're gonna make time stand still. We gotta feel the hunger. Hanging over the edge just to taste the thrill. These are the days of thunder.
Alrighty, folks, that's all I've got for you now. Take care. Bye bye.
Oh my God, that is amazing!
Oh no. Obviously, we just lost the satellite feed. That sucks.